Muddy Knees Media.
Welcome to the Offside Rule. It's me, Lindsay Hooper, in the hot seat this week, whilst Kate is very much in a hotter seat, enjoying life in Dubai. It's not just the players who've had a mid-season break. Our Kate has been on one as well. But the good news is I have in alongside me a Red Devil and a Hornet, neither of which will be removing a mask to reveal a talented singer at any point during this show. I lived with one of them. I know she isn't. I can't speak for you, Emma.
No.
You're not a good singer.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Very firm on that.
Well, let's introduce you properly. So first up, it is the Hornet, first of all. We're going to go with BBC Five Live, Radio London presenter, as well as a stadium announcer, Emma Saunders. Good to have you back.
Hello. I'm very, very jealous of Kate's holiday.
I know.
That is how you do a winter break, isn't it? I can't wait to hear all about Dubai.
I know. Winter sun.
Yeah.
You guaranteed it, aren't you? And alongside her, it's the Athletic's UK head of social media and South London women footballer, Harriet Drudge, and former roomie.
Former roomie. Yeah, a few years ago now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And rude about not being a good singer. Ouch. I was in a choir for 12 years.
Well, maybe it's more of the choir sort of song. I'm just thinking more pop.
Fair enough.
That used to just be in the shower.
That's legit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listening to
me. I don't think either of us really were great, were we? So how are you both doing? I'm going to start with Harriet, because you've been playing football now quite some time for a South London team. How is it going? Where are you in the league? What's happening?
We're currently second in the league. By quite some distance, we've got a bit of a points gap to the chasing pack.
Mm-hmm.
We have had, obviously, weather-affected matches in the last few weeks, which
storms.
Is unfortunate.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I've only played once since I was last on, and we lost, which was only our second defeat of the season. It played in horrible conditions. It was a real effort to even turn and run, let alone actually kick a football. But now it's going well, and yeah, I'm not injured, which is great.
Keep that up, because it's only a matter of time, Harriet. Emma, you went off to the Milan Derby.
I did.
With producer for our WSL show, Lucy.
Yeah.
And I was so jealous. I mean, I see him quite often, but to see a picture of you having a hug with Raul Jimenez from Wolves.
The whole trip got off to the most bizarre start. I mean, we'd only been and got to the airport, boarded our Ryanair flight, and then suddenly on trots Raul Jimenez. And we're thinking, hang on a minute, it was quite early in the morning, but what's he doing boarding this flight? Surely you'd, you know, charter a private jet if you were him going to Milan. And also, what's he doing going to Milan over his winter break? Like, it was lots of questions.
I want to know that was nothing related football
wise. Yeah. I hate to say it for anyone out there that has a bit of a crush on Mr. Jimenez, but he was greeted at the airport by his beautiful girlfriend and her family. It turns out, I think she's some kind of public figure, celebrity, actress or something in Italy. So that was all very exciting. And then we got scanned for coronavirus. It's before we even set foot out the airport. And then the Milan Derby itself. Wow, what a game that was. The first 20 minutes of it were a bit rubbish, and we were looking at each other thinking, oh, we know we spent all this money come this way. This is awful. But then, it got going. Six goals in the end, 4-2. Yeah.
Now, you need to tell me. So I went and did some Europa League filming once and went to the San Siro. In fact, we took a drone and did some really cool pictures above the stadium, but we weren't allowed inside. It was like, you can't touch it. You can see it, but you can't touch it. So what was it like in there?
I mean, yeah, it was literally rocking. When the fans were sort of jumping up and down, cheering, we were looking at each other thinking, they are closing this in a few years and that's for a reason. So, yeah, it's really, really old, but I love that. I love how much character and history it's got. And it was absolutely packed to the rafters. And then pre-match, you know, when the tifos appear and either side have planned this huge display before kickoff, it is quite something. It's one of those things. I only took about three pictures. So I had to borrow them all off Lucy, because you're so in awe. You just take it in. I didn't even think to take my phone
Living
out.
In the moment.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, Emma.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong this day and age. Just taking it in with your eyes.
It was quite something. I would recommend anyone, and do it now, because, San Siro,
it's
not going to be there for much longer.
If anyone as well loves their graffiti around the stadium, there's some awesome graffiti. I'm quite into that. So took some photos there when I went. If you go, check it out. So coming up today, we're bringing back some golden oldies to provide some much needed bolstering to our own teams. And after the week that Manchester City have had, we're talking bans, the weird, the serious ones to teams or players that they faced over time. But before we get into the show, though, a quick reminder that you can hear us on Jack Radio Fridays at 4 p.m. So all of that on the way, but first...
Timo Werner. It's a good ball played in, that's going to be a penalty. Yeah. It's Ben Davis on Konrad Leimer, and no choice at all for the Turkish referee. It's Timo Werner of Germany against Hugo Lloris of France. And Werner scores. Ice cold finish from the spot.
Ilicic makes the first touch. Got it out of his feet! And that's what happened next.
We're going with alliteration this time. European euphoria. Thank you, producer Abby. It's been a big week of Champions League football as we saw the first tranche of the round of 16 ties take place. And there were wins for Atletico Madrid and Borussia Dortmund on Tuesday, Atalanta and RB Leipzig on Wednesday. Note the absence of any English teams so far. First up, who impressed you the most? You can pick out individuals, players. There's been lots going around on social media, or teams, whatever you fancy. I'll start with Harriet.
I think Timo Werner, RB Leipzig, scored his 26th goal of the season to take the win home for Leipzig. He's just been the talk of the town, especially in Germany, as they're challenging for the title. And although, you know, Leipzig started really, really well in the first 20 minutes. You could see that they were really pushing forward. They looked composed. And even though he missed a couple of chances in the first half, in the second half when he stood up to take that penalty, he was just so calm, so composed. And he did a really, really good job last night.
It's like you say, a lot of eyes on him. In fact, there's quite a few players at the moment that have been linked with English Premier League clubs. I suppose it'd be amiss of us not to mention Haaland as well. Was he in your thoughts, Emma?
Yeah, absolutely. That goal he scored, the bullet. I've lost count the amount of times I've watched it back. It's kind of up there.
I want another angle. Yeah. I want another angle.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sure BT will come up with something, won't they? They do this unfiltered thing where they do that. They release about 8 different angles of a goal. But the noise it made when it hit the back of the net.
He was like a rampaging bull.
He really
was. That's what I would have said if I was commentating.
He's really, really quick. I think we all know that. But apparently, he was 0.3 of a second off the world 60-metre record at one point, running on that pitch. It was registered, yeah.
He is super quick. So this is the one thing. So if you've been hearing this debate since his performance, it's been Haaland versus Kane. Who is the better striker? And you cannot doubt that Haaland's quicker than Kane, but the all-rounder, are we still thinking that Kane edges it?
Haaland, I think you've got to give Haaland more years. He's not as experienced as Harry Kane, so it's quite a difficult
Still only 19.
Exactly, it's quite a difficult comparison to make. But if you take Haaland at Kane's age in years to come, I wouldn't mind betting that he's going to be a more complete striker.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sprint that he did, he'd actually cleared the ball from a corner. So he was basically on his own goal line. I headed it away and then was just motoring up the pitch when that top speed was recorded.
The other thing to add about Haaland as well, which I think is really different to Kane, he has this huge level of arrogance about him, which I think is going to take him to the Ronaldo, to the Messi level. And I think you need that extra level of arrogance. And to start with, it made me think, oh, I don't like you as a character. But now that he's backing it up with the good, you think, wow, you're going to be quite a player, aren't you?
If you are looking as well at all-round finishers, you know, I think Kane probably has that edge at the moment, clearly because of the age difference as well. But one of the areas that you think that Haaland can work on is finishing it with headers. I don't see him as a header of the ball yet when it comes to finishing. Like, I'm going to bring up my own player, but Raul Jimenez at Wolves got a great header on him. And I think if he can work on that area, but his left foot and right foot finishing, wow. Mm. Wow, wow, wow. Any more?
Just bringing it back to that game in North London from a Spurs point of view, Mourinho, the analogy that he came out with before the game was bizarre enough. You know, this thing about going down the lift or the stairs, hanging on to the balcony, I think is what he was saying. You wondered where that game against Leipzig left them. Well, apparently it's like having a gun with no bullets is the latest things he said, which I get it. I guess what he's alluding to is this situation where they don't really have any goal scorers with Kane and Son being out. But they do. Troy Parrott. But Mourinho's stubbornness, you're just never going to see it. But you only need to look back. I think it was 2016 when Marcus Rashford was finally given his opportunity in the same circumstances. In fact, it was at a Watford game. I was announcing, I'll never forget this, looking down at the bench, and it was full of all these high shirt numbers, your 40s, 50s, number 46, Marcus Rashford. And we were like, who's that?
Who's that?
Yeah. And then look what he did in that week. He ended up making his European debut against Midtjylland and scoring in that, and then coming back to the Premier League and scoring against Arsenal. These kids just need a chance. I think when you're in the mire that Tottenham are, surely you just give them a go.
You're onto something there as well, because even if you read into Mourinho's joking in the press conference, when he was asked about it, he jokes by saying about Peter Crouch. I mean, that just says it all, doesn't it? He's looking older. He's looking for that experience. No way would he step up and say, oh, well, yeah, I'll look to the younger lads coming through, which is a crying shame. I'm going to speak about another manager, actually, that caught my eye. The animated Diego Simeone, Atletico Madrid. I love him so much to watch. He was like an orchestra conductor, wasn't he? The way that he whipped the fans up, he was orchestrating all the time with his hands, fist pumping, really getting them to play a huge part in the result against Liverpool. And I thought that the return leg at Anfield will be a very interesting encounter. So that's March the 11th. That was only Liverpool's third defeat of the season. And I think if you were going to have money on someone getting one over on Liverpool, it would be Diego Simeone. He sets them up so well. I've got a couple of stats from this one. So Atletico, they've won 25 of 26 two-legged ties in the Champions League where they've won the first leg.
Wow.
So that's bad news for Liverpool fans, yeah. Potentially.
Potentially, but then Liverpool have got previous against Spanish opponents, mm-hmm. and having a first leg defeat away from home and bringing them back, and Anfield doing this, almost the same thing.
We all remember Barcelona from last season. Yeah. And I suppose as well in their favour is that when you say 25 of 26, the one that they actually did lose was last season. And it was when they lost 3-2 on aggregate against Juventus. Another one, which is very much like an Optostat. So the Champions League under Simeone, Atletico have only lost knockout ties that have had Cristiano Ronaldo in the opposition squad.
Right. Mm. Yeah, another Roman. I just think it was an off night for Liverpool, but when the rip-roaring form they're in, that is eventually going to happen. And I think if you're a Liverpool fan, there's nothing really wrong with it happening away at Atletico Madrid. Diego Simeone said beforehand, look, the plan is here. We're going to score early and we're going to defend solidly. It had to be perfect. And it was. I don't think you can necessarily complain too much about there. It's all about what they do at Anfield next. And you've seen Anfield this season. I would back Liverpool to go and do it. Those front three, yes, they look tired. But when you look at some of the biggest players across the continent, statistically, your likes of Messi, Ronaldo's, they're nowhere near as much game time as those front three for Liverpool. So eventually it's going to hit them. And I love this analogy that Kelly Cates used on Five Live. She said that Atletico team were like table football men. They were so, so solid. And I think eventually, when you're giving it so much as Liverpool are domestically, when you run into a team like that that's so well organised, you're going to come up against it. And it's a narrow scoreline. They can turn that round at Anfield.
Another couple of teams that don't get much of the back pages or much of the column inches, Atalanta and Valencia. But I wanted to mention them both because Valencia, they're seventh in La Liga. Atalanta are fourth in Serie A. And they've scored 63 goals this season, Atalanta. So anyone who's thinking, oh, they're the ones to get in the next draw, not necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think if you were one of the English sides, if anything, it'd be quite the opposite, wouldn't it? You wouldn't want to be run out against a team like that.
Yeah, absolutely. They played City earlier in the group stages, didn't they? And they struggled a little bit.
And Atalanta won that one 4-1. So teams in action next week. Let's just remind everyone, because do you think the winner's going to come out of the ones we've already seen, or could it be any of these ones? Napoli versus Barcelona, Chelsea play Bayern, Real Madrid against Man City, and Lyon against Juve.
It's so hard to call, but there is something that is so excited about this Borussia Dortmund team. I love watching, and their front three. I absolutely love this stat that came out of the Champions League midweek. So Dortmund's front three players were all English-born. So you've got Jadon Sancho, born in London, Reina, that was born in Sunderland, and Haaland, that was born in Leeds.
So are we adopting them as another side to cheer
on
in the Champions League?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm with you, Emma. I wouldn't put it past Manchester City now, given what they've, you know, what they've had to deal with this week, especially to just go and win it now. Just Pep, it would be classic, I think, if Pep was just like, right, all our eggs now in this basket, and just go and win it, just to say, oh, we don't need it.
And that brings us on nicely, Harriet. We can keep Europe covered there, but we will talk Manchester City more next and the ban that they've had and other bans in football. This is The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper, Harriet Drudge and Emma Saunders. So on to the next topic, Manchester City. What a shock that was on Friday. I was at Wolves against Leicester. Pops up as an alert on the phone and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Manchester City banned for 2 years as it stands. That's pending an appeal and they are putting one in. And they've got this huge fine as well. And the implications that could have for them, but also for the Premier League as well.
Yeah, City have always come out and said they are definitely going to be appealing this ban. It definitely came as a bit of a shock, but the statements came out at the same time UEFA City, so they've been preparing for it. The thing that's got them into trouble a little bit is, well, not a little bit, a lot, is the fact that they've withheld information. That's the thing that's been a bit different from when they've been pulled up on financial fair play before. Yeah, I mean, I was at home with my family. I'm not out on Valentine's Day, obviously.
Harriet, I'm going to get the violins out.
But yeah, I would just see this and I'd literally drop my phone and it was like mid-dinner as well. I was getting all these notifications through because obviously then you've kind of got to get back on it and do some research and help out with the editorial desk at The Athletic.
It is the first time it stopped me in my tracks since it's Rebecca Vardy, since I read that on my phone.
Well, I was in the hot seat of Five Live with a show all planned out for 3 hours. We had commentary of the Wolves game and sort of hour leading up to that, all magazine-y, quite nice, all quite laid back. Door flings open at 6:45 or whatever it was, and we're just getting ready to go on air at 7. This news is broken. So that completely tore up our running order. I just think it's a massive call from UEFA because if you're right, Harriet, and Man City throw everything at this now and win it, what's the competition going to be like next year without the winners in it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And they want to give them that to think about.
And the appeal process will probably take quite a long time. So it might not be next season's Champions League where if the ban is upheld, then it might not be next season because the appeal process might take so long.
The Court of Arbitration.
I had a whole hour of that on Friday night.
Just say Cass.
The Court of Arbitration want an answer by June. That might help with that, Harriet, but it is a good point to raise because these things tend to drag on, don't they? Let's talk about other bans in football. Weird and wonderful, serious if you want. Some of the longest, some of the shorter ones. What have you got for me this time, Harriet?
Well, I've gone quite rogue. And
rogue? You?
Yeah, me. And you mentioned Troy Parrott earlier on, and I've got a story about a parrot who was banned from a football match.
Okay.
So this was in the Hertfordshire Senior Centenary Trophy quarterfinal. Bit of a mouthful.
It's nearly as bad as Court of Arbitration.
Yeah. Well, a fan had brought along a pet parrot to watch the football and it kept mimicking the referee's whistle. So the referee had to go over and say, sorry, you've got to go. And the parrot was banned from coming ever again.
And it obviously had got really into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really engrossed getting into the game.
Well, keeping in with the bird theme, but I'm sorry, this is slightly more morbid. We have to go over to Colombia for this example. It was a game between Deportivo Pereira and Junior Barranquilla. I think I'm saying that correctly. If anyone's been to Crystal Palace, you'll know that there's an eagle that kind of swoops down across the game before you go. It's quite dramatic, isn't it? I quite like it.
I think I filmed a feature around the eagle once.
Well, this side, Junior Barranquilla, have a lucky mascot, which is an owl. And apparently, during the game, it flew down to the ground with an injured wing, and Luis Moreno, who's a Deportivo Pereira defender, kicked it.
Oh no.
And I hate to say, apparently it then died of shock. So as a ban, well, he escaped jail, which was apparently potentially on the cards, but he was forced to do community work at a zoo, banned for 2 games and fined $500.
Just 2 games?
I know.
Animal cruelty.
Yeah.
We don't want any more of those examples.
Yeah.
Harriet, for Manchester United, going to remind you of one. Nani, when Nani joined Manchester United, this is back in 2007, you may recall at the very beginning, he did a lot of backflips.
Yes, he did.
So Sir Alex Ferguson noticed this and thought, I don't want him landing on his head, getting injured, £17.3 million at the time. That wouldn't be good enough. So I'll give him a warning, first of all. He proceeded to then do a double backflip in his next match. So I think he got a few fines and a few bans later and eventually stopped doing it as much. Although I don't think he ever really stopped.
No, I don't think so. I think he just altered the technique a little bit and did, you know, he did some other acrobatics.
Yeah.
on the theme of people doing backflips, Luana Loa Loa used to do some pretty impressive backflips when he used to play. But I think he used to love mayonnaise. He used to have mayonnaise with everything, and he was banned his diet. He wasn't allowed to have mayonnaise anymore by one of his managers when he was at Portsmouth, which wouldn't be any good for me either. I love mayo. Yeah, love a bit of mayo.
I love a bit of mayo. Actually, Paolo Di Canio, when he came in as manager at Sunderland, I don't know if any of you remember this, but he banned just about everything. The no mobile phones. There was this quote where he famously said it'd be thrown in the North Sea if he catches anyone on a phone. They weren't allowed fizzy drinks. They weren't allowed ketchup or mayo, any kind of fast food. They weren't even allowed to joke or gossip within 3 hours of kickoff time on a match day. He kept them up that season, but didn't last much longer the following season.
It's a wonder I still haven't got arm ache. I did a post-match interview with him and I was stood there interviewing Paolo Di Canio. I asked the first question and 11 minutes later, he was still answering it and I was still holding my hand out. Hurt a lot. Chelsea, I think if we went through, there's quite a few examples of drugs or missing drugs tests and things like that for bans in football. But I purposely picked out these two right next to each other because they both played for Chelsea at the time. So 2003, you might remember Mark Bosnich. This is for cocaine use. 9 months was the ban, and he also lost the appeal and his contract was terminated with the club. And then you'd think, well, that's warning enough, which makes Adrian Mutu even stupider, because then the season after, 7 month ban because he got tested positive for cocaine and he was never seen in English football again.
Yeah, I remember that.
One of the bans for anyone listening attentively to this podcast that I'd like to introduce is for drilling when recording podcasts. Anyway, any more for any more?
On a lighter note, Stefan Schwartz, a Swedish midfielder, which you might remember played for Arsenal and then Sunderland in the late 90s, early 2000s in the Premier League. He was actually banned from going out of space. This is dead serious. So when he joined Sunderland from Valencia, the club had played multiple millions for him. They had to put a clause in his contract which stated that if he was to travel into outer space, then his contract would be made invalid. And apparently it's because his agent had a couple of places booked in advance with this airliner that at the time said that they would be taking commercial flights into space in the early 2000s. So, yeah, they had to put a stop to that.
He was signed up. But he was ready to go.
Yeah, as far as I know, he never made it to outer space and finished his career, at Sunderland.
He could still make it to Mars. That could still happen.
Rangers, in December 2015, decided to ban their youth players from growing beards, which I've just found completely bizarre.
I think this is related to a previous The Offside Rule story that Kate Borsay was telling about when in Scotland a youth team were actually, I think they were posing to be under 18s or something, but actually were about 21 and they all had full-on beards. So they probably said, well, then we don't have any confusion. If they don't grow the beards, no one's going to think that they're...
Well, the Rangers hierarchy and the manager at the time said it was in a bid to improve player discipline that they weren't allowed to grow beards. I don't know how that would affect discipline, but yeah, they were banned from growing beards.
Well, if you've spotted any good bans, we want to hear more of those to throw into the pile. So at Offside Rule Pod is our Twitter handle. There's so many out there. Obviously, the Luis Suarez bite, that was a huge ban, all that sort of thing. But I don't think many will top this one. A French non-league player was banned back in November 2019 for 5 years for biting an opponent's private part. You're not meant to do that in football. Apparently, the victim required 10 stitches, had to take 4 days off work.
You're not meant to do that in football.
You're not meant to do that generally.
What can we say? He was clearly going for the ball.
clearly was. Missed. Which one? Next, bring back the legends.
Ted, my boy, it's going to be legend. Wait for it. Dairy. Legendary.
So the studio's packed out with a Wolves fan, me, a Man United fan, Harriet, and a Watford fan in Emma. And what I want you to do for this one, we're looking at golden oldies, but you're looking at your team as it currently is, in the system that it is, the manager that you've got, and the style that you've been playing. And you're going back into your archives and you're picking out one player that can come back into your starting 11 to make it better. It's going to bolster the squad. So who is it that you bring in? And it isn't necessarily the best player that's ever been at your club, which, Harriet, you'd have a few to choose from. Emma and I are struggling a little bit more. But there are plenty that you could bring in to help right now. Who would you go for right now, Emma?
Well, with Watford's position in the table, I think it's safe to say we could probably strengthen in a lot of areas of the pitch. But the back line, we've conceded 40 goals this season. We've got the joint second worst goal difference in the league. So John McClelland Okay, you're forgiven if this name doesn't ring
it
a bell.
It doesn't, I'm going to be honest.
He was brought in by possibly the greatest ever Watford manager, Graham Taylor. And I think that says a lot immediately. If Graham Taylor's signing a player, he must be pretty good. So he was a centre-back. He played for Watford 231 times over 5 seasons. And in that time, he won the Player of the Season award twice, which typically is defender. They don't tend to win those kind of awards. It's often goal scorers. I was reading an interview with him, actually, where he also said he didn't really pay much attention outside of the game when he was playing. He said he didn't used to watch much TV or check the league table, which I think this kind of focus Watford probably need right now. And moreover, this is the good bit. His debut was at home to Sunderland in 1984. Watford were in the relegation zone at the time. They needed to turn results around. They beat them 3-1 that day and went on to win 5 in a row. So bring back John McLennan, who apparently is a postman now in Leeds.
Oh,
so
like
John,
that.
You're welcome. That's back anytime.
Harriet.
Brilliant. Well, you say that you could do with a few swaps. I feel like Man United could do with quite a few swaps as well, with some golden oldies coming back. So there's two positions really that we've been crying out for recruitment in. One is striker. Obviously, we've brought in Ighalo in January and see how he'll get on. But the other is in midfield. Fred's had a bit of a renaissance this season. Last season, he just couldn't do the simple things well. He'd win the ball back. He'd always work really, really hard. But then as soon as he won the ball back, he'd give it away straight away. But this season's a bit of a different story. He's playing really well. It's his deeper midfielder partner that I'm going to swap out. So sorry, Nemanja Matic. Bye-bye. I'm going to replace him with Paul Scholes. Paul Scholes is my favourite ever player, but the reason to bring him back, and he came back, obviously famously, after he retired, he did make a little comeback for a season and a half, making a second debut, I guess, against Manchester City in the FA Cup. They were winning 3-0 at the time. He came on and it went to 3-2, but let's skirt over that. But I think we just need a bit more dynamism in that midfield. We need someone who can not only play those amazing lofty forward passes for the quicker players like Danny James to run onto, but also just a bit more nouse about the game and a bit more game management. He used to manage a game really well, so he could slow it down when it needed to slow it down and keep possession. That's, you know, the biggest thing at the moment as well, is we turn over possession far too easily, and he used to boss games on his own. So I would bring back Paul Scholes.
I'm bringing back a midfielder as well into Wolves' current squad, because I think the one thing that we're missing is a midfielder who's scoring goals. Now, I think Ruben Neves is brilliant. He's great at taking free kicks, and Jean Moutinho, but I want to slot in another one there and bring back Alex Ray. Now, Alex Ray, he scored 7 goals in his first season at Wolves. He got Player of the Year that season as well. And I think as well, when you look at important goals, I remember the playoffs when we got to the playoff final, the match before that when Wolves played Reading, he scored the goal that got us to the Division 1 playoff final. So you want someone who can also handle the pressure on those occasions. He would do that. And in the Premier League, when we eventually, from that playoff final, because we beat Sheffield United, just to point out, and then went up, he scored 8 goals and was Wolves' highest scorer that season. It wasn't good enough for us to stay in the league. But he's the sort of player that we need in midfield, someone who's going to chip in with a few goals here and there, so that it isn't always on Jimenez, Traore and Jota, but that there's also some goals coming from a bit further back. And I don't think we've been having as many of those. So that's why I would be bringing in Alex Ray. I know when I said golden oldies that a couple of you were starting to message saying about really old players. I mean, obviously, it would probably be Billy Wright for Wolves, but for you, Emma?
Well, no, I was going to say John McLennan is back from the 80s. I'd probably go more recent on the flip side. You mentioned Odion Ighalo. I'd have him back at Watford in a heartbeat. I mean, when that first season Watford came back up to the Premier League, he scored 15 goals that season. I know a lot of people are quick to criticise maybe the way his hold-up play isn't the best, but that season he was prolific. And when you look at it now, our top scorer, you know, Troy Deeney's only on 5. I think Andre Gray's only scored 2. Granted, Watford did play a different system then, a 4-4-2. But bring it back, because that season, the two teams that were playing 4-4-2 were Watford, who did really well, and Leicester, who won the league that year.
Won the league,
so bring back Ighalo and a 4-4-2, please.
Have you got any golden oldies?
Like a really proper old? I don't think so. I mean, the player that I would like to have seen play. It was Eric Cantona.
Oh my gosh, that makes me feel so
I'm
old.
Not saying he's a golden goldie.
I thought you were going to go for someone from the 1900s. Eric Cantona, yes.
I hadn't seen him play, so in that sense, it felt like, you know, I would have loved to have seen him play properly rather than just in Soccer 8.
I also think that he would plug that gap in terms of creative for Manchester United, because I think that is the one thing that you're missing, is that player that can just go and drive the ball and do something with it and turn a game, and he would do that. Let's go on to any other business. Just before we close the show, let's think about some other stories that we might have missed from the world of football this week. I will get us started. Because we're called the offside rule, I feel like every time there's an update to the offside law, as some people like to point out it should be called, I think that we need to make sure that everyone's aware of that, what that is. And Arsene Wenger, who now has this role at FIFA as head of global development, has suggested, with all the VAR shenanigans, that there should be a clear daylight rule. That is what we're all crying out for, isn't it? Because then we wouldn't have this millimetre, this toenail being offside. This is good, yes? Is anyone against it?
I'm not sure. I just think you're moving the debate then on to something else. Do you not think?
I've also read quite a lot about any part of the goal scorer that's onside. That means it's onside. That's also a debate at the moment as well, I think. Whereas that you can literally have your whole, where you can score with your head being offside, and your toe, it just then flips the part of the body with the offsides, and it's creating more carnage than it's worth, isn't it? And daylight, I mean, daylight will mean different things to different people.
Exactly.
No, daylight means see daylight between it. Like, there has to, however narrow the gap is, you can see daylight.
That's what I mean, though. But the people in Stockley Park,
that's easier to see than a toenail, isn't it?
Yeah, well, again, the fact that we're even debating about whether you can see a toenail or a little smidgen of light in between a player and the defender is just mental in itself, isn't it?
I'm for this. I think Arsene's done good here. It's not going to happen, by the way, for this Euros in the summer, but it is being discussed. Okay, Harriet, what else have you got?
Players in Spain's top women's division, they've signed a collective agreement on pay. So they went on strike in November, so Premier Division fixtures were postponed, but now they've come to an agreement, so that's good news in Spain for a women's game.
And speaking of women's football, the She Believes Cup, we've got an update on that because that starts next month. Phil Neville announced his squad, and just a couple of the standout sort of takeaways from that. Fran Kirby and Jodie Taylor not included, if you've been used to watching them as lionesses over the last couple of tournaments, mainly because for Fran, in her case, she's been overcoming some illness. But some great news for West Ham's Grace Fisk and Everton's Sandy McIver, both getting their call-ups at the ages of 22 and 21. They must be delighted, their family. So well done to them.
Bring it back to Spain briefly. News that Martin Braithwaite, the name might ring a bell with Middlesbrough fans. Striker has been playing his football at Leganés, who was struggling a bit in La Liga, to say the least. He now finds himself playing at the Nou Camp for Barcelona in a strange twist of fate. What's allowed this to happen is there's a rule now in La Liga that if your player is out injured for 5 months or more, you are able to make what's effectively an emergency signing. So they've done just that. And as long as you meet the player buyout clause, the club that the player is with can't argue. So they've got absolutely no chance of fighting that, Leganés. And Mr. Braithwaite's on his way to play for Barcelona.
There can't be, can there? There can't be many players from Borough that have ended up at Barcelona. Did you know as well there's a buyout clause in that contract? 300 million euros, 251 million pounds.
Wow.
It's sort of an inflated version of Igalo, isn't it?
Yeah, we can say that.
Going to Man United, do you think? On a lower scale, yeah. Harriet? I don't know. Ugh.
And I'll squeeze another in. Now, for any listeners that rent their property, I rent one in North London. Conversations with your landlord, they're never that easy, are they? If they get in touch with you, it's usually something pretty negative.
I'm a really nice landlady.
They really?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Well, my experience, unfortunately, hasn't been so positive. If you're getting in touch with them, it's because you've broken something or to moan about something negative. If they're getting in touch with you, it's because the rent's gone up or they're going to turf you out. Imagine your landlord is Neil Warnock. So there is this hilarious tweet that's doing the rounds from a boy called Reece Stevens, who just took a snap of him in his front room and was met with a lot of speculation whether or not it was him, because it was a little bit blurry, the photo. But no, Reece says Neil Warnock is genuinely my landlord. You wouldn't miss a rent deadline, would you?
I wouldn't put it past Neil to get the heavies out if he was owed some money, would you?
No,
not at all. He's connected, isn't he, Neil? Well, that's all we've got time for on today's show. Keep up with everything Offside Rule related via Twitter and Insta at Offside Rule Pod. On our website as well, you can read some of the best up-and-coming football writers. Harriet was once one of them. Go to offsiderulepodcast.com and see what's out there this week. A big thank you to Harriet and Emma for sharing the mic with me this week and keeping me company. Listeners, we'll speak again next time.
The Offside Rule is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Hello, listeners. I'm Caroline Barker, host of the Totally Football League show. I'm joined each week by Sam Parkin. Say hello, Sam.
Hi, Caroline.
By Adrian Clark. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And the Bolton Wanderers fan too. Not Adrian, but Joe Cridley. Looking forward to League Two.
Yes.
Each week we go headfirst into the EFL to bring you the latest from the pitches to the next crisis to whatever Ian Holloway has said now. From Leeds to Luton, Sunderland to Plymouth, Swindon to Stevenage and everything in between. If it's the EFL you want, we've got you covered. Haven't we, Ollie?
Just a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Your guess is as good as ours. That's the Totally Football League show, out every Wednesday.
In the most delightful way. It's brilliant. I just love it.
Muddy Knees Media.